Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
But now we're recording.
Yeah. Happy Christmas, by the way.
Happy Christmas. So I like to think that people will listen to this on Christmas Day while they're preparing the Brussels sprouts, but it's possible that they'll be hearing it in the in-between days.
Well, it's still Happy Christmas. I was thinking that, wasn't it?
It's always a weird thing that the radio stops playing Christmas music. I think the second Christmas Day is over, or maybe Boxing Day, and then that's it. I think there needs to be more good New Year songs. Happy New Year by ABBA is probably the best.
Happy Year by ABBA?
Yeah. You want me to sing it for you, don't
go
you?
Go on, yeah.
I'm not going to. All right. I'll call you and sing it down your
ear. But you were saying before we turned on the tape that you've been to a party and you had a good time, like this is an amazing thing.
Yeah, it was the weirdest thing. We got invited to this party and my wife was really excited about it.
Thanks for asking me to come along, by the way.
I think it's a bit different me not inviting you to a party than me not inviting you to somebody else's party.
Yeah, that's true.
They're two different
things.
Yeah,
that's true.
So I tried
to find a way to sort of get some moral high ground.
Score points.
Yeah, exactly.
No, you failed.
Get points back, yeah.
So as an act of kindness in my marriage, I've suppressed my sense of dread about it. I kept a lid on it. And then the night we were going to this party, we'd been out for dinner with some friends beforehand, and she said that I visibly started to spiral downwards. She said, you're feeling anxious about this. I said, I am, yeah. I've been feeling anxious for weeks. It's all I've been thinking about. Anyway, we got there, and I don't know what happened, but I had a good time. I was confident. My anecdotes were landing. People seemed interested in what I had to say. I met interesting people. I laughed a lot.
I mean, that's great. Are you really serious that you were anxious for weeks beforehand?
Oh, God, yeah. Any party I go to, it's like there's this sense of dread in the pit of my stomach. And then I can get into a full-blown panic attack on the way there.
What's the worst thing that could happen?
Well, that's a good therapy question, isn't it? It's about how socially incompetent I feel when I'm there, I think.
I mean, I'm really sorry, Jeff.
Oh, you know, it's all right, really.
But will it then give you a sort of base of confidence to think that the next...
No, this is what happens. I feel that, you know, if you're playing a computer game and sometimes the character gets, I don't know what the right lingo is, but they get charged up and all of a sudden they can go faster and jump higher and do stuff, and then it wears off after about 30 seconds. I feel that twice a year I become socially capable, and I feel like I've got this superpower. I think, this is it. I've finally learned at the age of 50 how to be socially capable. And then the next day, I go and buy a coffee in the cafe and my small talk is as awkward as ever. And I'm feeling incredibly self-conscious all over again. Somebody wrote in about this because, you know, we were touching on this in the last episode.
Yeah.
Catherine wrote in about this. She gave us some good information about moths as well, which I can come on to.
Oh, good. We like some good information about moths.
She says, I listened with interest to your conversation about communicating. I understand all too well about shyness and reluctance to talk to people. I think a lot of it is personal insecurity, a fear of revealing yourself and that the person may not like you. It is, and I speak for myself, a real self-absorption. I'm 60 next year, and one of the advantages of that enormous number is that my self-consciousness is slipping, and despite some social anxiety, it's easier to talk to people and listen to what they say without simultaneously reflecting on myself. So I feel like, really, Catherine's telling me I'm a narcissist and I need to snap out of it.
Maybe she is.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that, though. I don't think it is that. What's the closest any therapist has come to helping you with this?
Well, I you know, I'm sober, right? So yeah. I never did AA or anything. And a therapist that I saw for years who was brilliant, and this was probably like 15 years into my sobriety or something, he said if you'd done AA, you would have worked through most of this in the first 18 months.
Yeah.
Because I know people have a range of opinions on AA, but I think that particular thing, going into rooms and meeting strangers and like being your authentic self and making yourself vulnerable, probably catapults you out of that, right?
Because
you're forced into an environment where you're sharing.
And is it, you may want to stop this conversation, but is it something that happened in your childhood that makes you think this?
I think it would be, this is how I feel about socializing, but I think it would be boring for people to listen to my theories as to why I think it is. But it was very much, I can tell you it was very much masked by my drinking, and I was sort of the opposite of that. And then when the drink, I made the decision.
So interesting, because you see, I'm anxious about lots and lots and lots of things, and it's just the one thing I'm not anxious about.
It's so nice, it's such an endearing quality.
What? Why?
Because I feel so hampered by it so much of the time that, like, you as this wide-eyed extrovert energized with people and not worrying about how your anecdote is landing or what they're thinking about you, I think reflects incredibly well on you.
Well, I don't think it does really.
Charming.
Well, no, but maybe it's a sort of arrogant. I don't know. I mean, maybe.
No, I think it's charming. I think it's lovely. But do you want to hear what Catherine had to say about clothes moths while we've got her email?
Yeah, go on then.
Let me just take my distance glasses off.
I mean, at least she won't be saying the clothes moth were self-obsessed narcissists.
She says, I was curious on the vital question of clothes moths, so I found this surprising article. We are all connected in nature. So this is an article from the Museums Association Journal. The headline is Drought May Be Behind Sharp Falling Clothes Moths, says National Trust. Overall insect pest numbers dropped 3% last year, according to the charity's annual pests report. The Trust says that the 39% drop in webbing clothes moths, which can cause serious damage to all manner of things, carpets, upholstery, taxidermy, woolen objects, as I know too well, was probably due to a period of record heat and drought in 2022. Assistant National Conservator Hilary Jarvis said, "This was surprising news. We had thought climate change would be a boon for this moth, which originates from South Africa and is no stranger to heat. But changing weather patterns are challenging our thinking."
So I was right. Basically, I was right, is what you're saying.
No, well, yeah. It's. I think what. I think.
I mean,
what,
long on the short of it, you said.
Well,
it wasn't
Hilary, Hilary Jarvis does seem to know more about this particular aspect of the ecosystem than you do. And he thought, I mean, or her, I'm not sure which, thought that these clothes moths.
Yeah, but basically, you and Hillary were wrong. You and Hillary were wrong, and I was right. It's sort of basically what you're saying.
Yeah, but maybe like.
But I was sort of. It was basically you're saying I was quite lucky to be right because I should have been wrong.
Stopped clock. It was stopped clock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, at least that's clarified. Now,
but silverfish are on the rise.
Oh, I don't like silverfish.
Do you like moths?
I think I like them more than silverfish.
Mm.
Now,
yes.
So my eye was caught by an article by Leah Epi, and it's sort of basically very clever. She's somebody who wrote a book called Free about growing up in Albania, and I think she's a professor, I think at the London School of Economics, in political theory, I think political philosophy. And really her article is saying, I thought this was quite a good Christmas theme. I think what she's saying is, hope is a decision, not a belief. To hope is a decision, not a belief. She doesn't use exactly those words, but that's sort of what I took out of it.
What you took from it.
It's quite, I mean, she doesn't just talk about that, but it's quite an interesting idea. It's sort of all about hope.
How is she defining hope? Because we've run into a few people over the years on this podcast who want to make the point that hope and optimism aren't.
Let me just read a couple of bits. Thing. So the moment of 2033, this is how she begins, it's an article in The Guardian, that gave me hope was one in which I thought all hope was lost. It was a Friday morning in the middle of October, and I just started exploring with my students Immanuel Kant's 1784 essay, What is Enlightenment? Most people tend to think of hope as an attitude that sits somewhere between a desire and a belief. A desire for a certain outcome and the belief that something favours its realisation. We look for evidence in the world, see if it conforms to our wishes, and if we find it, we have hope, otherwise not. But for me, hope means something different. Being hopeful has nothing to do with how the world goes. It's a kind of duty, a necessary complement to morality. What is the point of trying to do the right thing if we have no reason to think others do the same? What is the point of holding others responsible if we think responsibility is beyond their capacity? Hope is the opposite of nihilism, I think.
I always say nihilism, but I have heard people say nihilism.
Yeah, nihilism. Nihilism means doom-laden. Paradoxically, the worse the world goes, the more hopeful you must remain to be able to continue fighting. Being hopeful is not about guaranteeing the right outcome, but preserving the right principle, the principle based on which a moral world makes sense. So, and then she goes on to say what made her lose hope, and it was a conversation she had in her class. But then she also says at the end that one of the truths is that, you know, there are very, she says the last line is, whether there is hope or not is only a relevant question for those who have the privilege to doubt it. That is a small fraction of the world. So I think she's basically saying so many people in the world are just trying to live, trying to survive. People who suffer from injustice, who withstand daily insults to their dignity, who are marginalised, silenced, exploited, left out, killed, cannot afford to ask themselves if they have hope. They cling on to life, they try to cope, they fight. Their continuing struggle, whatever form it takes, cannot afford the loss of faith. So anyway, I was quite interested in this. Lots of people will say to me, oh, you know, there's so many bad things happening in the world, how can you remain hopeful? I think it was sort of it's stimulating because it made me think hope is not a prediction.
Right.
I think she's questioning the idea that hope is a sort of, you know, and in a way, or how do you remain hopeful? And I often say something like, oh, it's part of the job description. And I never really kind of...
But is that just a platitude?
Well, yes, but I think it's a sort of platitude with some meaning behind it, but I never really properly thought what the meaning was. Why do I...
So when you think of it in relation to your job and it being part of the job description, that hopefulness in people is
I mean, she seems
job.
To be saying not just it's a thing because otherwise you'll curl up and not do anything and still hide under the duvet. Mm. She also seems to be saying part of her politics is believing in the goodness of other people, and therefore you have to feel hopeful because you've got to feel that things could be better because people are good, and if people are good, things should become better or have a good chance of becoming better. Maybe she's also saying that.
I guess if hope is innate, You can either think of it as an individualistic trait about you and your hopes for your life, or that it's something to be tapped into, that if it's part of who we are, that the idea of a shared hope is actually quite a lovely ideal.
Yeah, but that's quite a nice Christmas thought, isn't it?
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Do you want some good news? Some glad tidings of great joy?
Definitely.
I am married to a trophy wife.
Go on.
By the time this podcast hits your ears, the news will be out that my wife is a mastermind.
Is on Mastermind?
Well, she's on Celebrity Mastermind tonight.
Oh, wow.
As we're talking. And she won.
She won?
Yes. I was as surprised as you are.
That is extraordinary.
Yes, I know.
What? Tell me more. What was her specialist subject?
So she wanted to do Succession, but somebody had already done it. And then she suggested like Sex and the City and 30 Rock, and people had already done those on Celebrity Mastermind. So eventually she landed on Guys and Dolls, the musical.
Does she know a lot about Guys and Dolls?
Well, I would have said, you know, she's got a working knowledge of it and nothing more. But she is incredibly studious. So I got a little glimpse into what it must have been like when she was revising for exams, because she watched it every day for the film version for a few weeks. And she read books, she made notes, she had me testing her repeatedly. And I thought, oh, she'll do really well on the specialist subject because she is so committed to memorization and revision. But she isn't, by her own admission, she's not a
general knowledge.
She's not a pub quizzer. But I think I haven't seen it because it's on tonight. But I think she must have just got very lucky.
Well, you weren't in the studio audience.
No, she went to Belfast to film it.
Wow. What prize did she win?
A trophy and a donation to charity.
How fantastic.
Yeah.
Who were her competitors?
Do you remember a song called Cuddly Toy from the 80s?
No.
It's one of these you'd know it if you heard it. It was the guy who sang that who was called Roachford. I think maybe an actor and maybe somebody from BBC Sports. I'm not sure because, like I say, I haven't seen it yet.
Was she pleased to won?
Yes, yeah. And I feel so bad for not having faith in her.
Who's the presenter of Mastermind?
It's Clive Myrie these days.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I'm generally bowled over. I would never do something like that.
Well, I wouldn't. And when she told me, she said, I'm doing a thing, because she's American, says I'm doing a thing called Celebrity Mastermind. And I think my face went a bit grey because I thought, oh, no, it's going to be humiliating. Like the pressure of it. Like she doesn't like that sort of trivia quiz thing. So I thought you're going to be out of your depth with the general knowledge round. I thought it was going to be this like humiliation and she was going to bring shame on her, shame on our family.
How many did she get? Did she get all of the Guys and Dolls answers right?
I don't know. Like I say, it's on tonight. So I'm going to watch it. My mum and dad are here. So we're going to watch it. But
when was it recorded?
Oh, it was a few months ago, like 2-3 months ago, I guess.
And were you sworn to secrecy?
Yes, yeah. And she's been sworn to secrecy. She's got a photograph of herself with the trophy, but...
Did you tell Gene or not?
Yeah, he's going to watch. Like, she never usually will let him watch. I mean, firstly, because she's potty-mouthed, but she usually won't let him watch anything she does on TV. She doesn't like him having an awareness of that world. But, it's... I'm going to sit down and watch it tonight.
Genuinely impressed.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
I'm genuinely impressed. Now, I think you've got some listeners' diddlies for us, yeah?
Yeah. I've got a couple that I wanted to mention.
This one comes from Ewan Williams, and it says, please, please keep on going on with the chatteroos. So we thought we'd read it out. And we're a bit late with the feed this week. And so he sent us, and he's from... He seems to be emailing from Germany, I think, from Berlin. Hello, I'm horrified to see no chatteroo. No new chatteroo in my podcast feed this morning. Feeling adrift, as it is the first time in years, not only at least one of your voices in my ear. Do you think he knows about adrift? Anyway, the end of reasons to be cheerful. He definitely thought I think he definitely had a kind of rather catastrophic view of our lateness.
I'm sorry. Can I just say that was nothing to do with Ed and everything to do with me? No, I had a bit of a family emergency.
Family emergencies take precedence. You wouldn't leave without saying goodbye, would you? It sounds mean, but I'm hoping one of you has a cold and you just need to recuperate, more or less. Really enjoy the new look of the podcast. It's an appointment listen for me. I have to play it in my right ear as I put my twin baby boys to bed for their midday sleep. Aw. We'll have to search for an old episode to get my fix. He then does say, P.S. Ed does an impression of an animal for an old television show, Bullseye, I'm Real Millennial, Don't Get the Reference. And every time I read Chatter on my phone, I hear the last part as a Miliband impression. Ooh. What is read Chatter on my phone? What does that mean?
He says every time he sees the word chatteroo on the phone, he hears that that ooh syllable as you doing chatteroo. An impersonation of Bendy Bully from Bullseye.
Okay, then he says, oops, patience is a virtue. The episode loaded into my feed shortly after. That was such a nice email.
It was really nice. It's nice to think of him putting his twins to sleep.
Exactly.
I hope we're suitably soporific.
Yes. What's yours?
Well, the one I wanted to read was this from Miranda Williams, who said, I can't quite believe I'm emailing you about your loo chat.
Yeah.
But here we are. As a local councillor, when I was a cabinet member, we were looking at leases of our buildings, community centres, leisure centres, libraries and such. I suggested that we leisure wrote centre. Into their lease.
Yeah.
Yes.
Leisure centre.
Got a keen interest in
got
leisure
a good centres, story about that.
I suggested that we wrote into their leases that their loos had to be open to the public when the buildings were open, as I was so fed up with signs that loos were for service / centre users only. Sadly, the last locals meant it gained no traction.
Wow.
We also had an amazing resident bring forward a map of all the loos in the borough. Sadly, it was just before COVID and never got the proper airtime it deserved. I love this, the idea of toilet cartographers.
It's like sort of Zap Map, which does electric charging points.
Yes.
Plop Map.
Yes. I also think better family loos / baby changing could be addressed through the planning process. Building a new pub / shopping centre / leisure centre, etc. Make sure that there are changing places, toilets and decent baby changing facilities available to all and not just in the disabled loo. As ever, she says, the answer is labour in power nationally and locally. This is what I said to you. Get it in that manifesto. Did you bring it up with Keir Starmer? Because I know you were doing some
We were a cop together.
Yeah, did it come up?
No. Moving on. Now, Christmas...
But you,
yeah, I think we're just... No, we're moving.
You could text him now if you wanted
we're
to.
We're just moving on. Right.
I'd like to hear from you on Christmas Day.
No, moving on. Now, Christmas gifts. I think we should end on Christmas gifts.
Yes.
You brought up Myrdle.
Yes.
Which does sound like Wordle. By the way, our streak is nearing our record. I also sort of noticed Myrdle, and I haven't yet purchased it, but I'm...
Just before we come on to Myrdle, how did you do on the day when Wordle was funny, the word funny? I thought that was really hard.
Can't remember, but we're on a streak of 123, so...
I think maybe then, just from your answer to that question, you're taking... glory from your family's achievements. I wonder if other people are doing the heavy lifting with the Wordle and you're just you're claiming that victory as your own.
Okay,
a bit like me and Mastermind.
I've got a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you think it's a problem? You know how Wordle doesn't repeat its words?
Yes.
Do you think it's wrong to check back to see what words there have been?
Oh.
There's a no spoiler, like, past Wordle words. Do you think that's a problem or not? I've had this discussion with my children. Do you think it's okay? They are quite...
I don't think it's in the spirit of it. I think if you've got a mental memory bank of the words, that's fine. But I think going back and checking, doesn't feel kosher to me.
Okay. That's interesting. Thank you for that.
Have I backed up your opinion there?
Well, I was sort of ambivalent about it, and they thought it was okay.
And what about Justine?
Hasn't given a ruling. So go on, Myrdle.
Yes. So The murder mystery puzzle book, Murdle, has climbed the UK bestsellers chart to become this year's Christmas number one book, even beating Richard Osman, which I think nobody thought that was possible. It's based on a daily puzzle website developed in 2021, and across 100 challenges in the book, readers must use codes and maps to decipher who the killers are. It's sold more than 200,000
copies. It does sound like quite a good thing for my kids, actually. I was thinking of getting it.
Yeah, I think you definitely should. Yeah. I'm very keen, maybe, to give somebody Myrdal as a stocking filler now, because I'm very excited. My mum was like obsessed with TV detectives. Like, she loved
true crime.
Poirot. Yeah, well, not true crime. No, like Agatha. Yeah, like Poirot.
Oh, I was always a sucker for Poirot when I was growing up.
Yeah, yeah.
My dad used to love Peter Ustinov as Ustinov
yes.
As Poirot.
Aha.
Do you remember that?
I know that he did it. I don't remember seeing
probably
it.
Probably I was an earlier generation than you.
I always remember Peter Ustinov as being one of these great anecdotalists. That's where he lives in my brain. Like,
yeah.
He was this actor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he was also one of the great value for money chat show
And
guests.
Miss Marple. Joan Hickson's Miss Marple, I really liked.
Yes, yeah.
What was your mum's favourite?
Poirot, she was obsessed with. She'd watch anything, though, and she'd watch them over and over again, and then sit and say, "Oh, I know who did it," but she hadn't figured out. She just remembered. I always liked Columbo.
I don't know if I knew Columbo. I mean, I know the name. We like Morse. Morse.
Have you watched Knives Out?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought the first one was great, and quite enjoyed the second one. But that feels like the best modern detective of that ilk.
Shall I tell you what I've got for Justine?
Yes.
I have got a flamingo made out of flip-flops.
Oh. We're recording this before Christmas.
Recycled flip-flops.
I mean, it sounds horrible.
Why? It's not a real flamingo.
I should hope not made out of flip-flops.
Honestly,
it's a robot.
No, because I tell you why. Because she bought in the summer a little dog made out of flip-flops from this particular company.
So you're having a flip-flop menagerie.
And I just suddenly thought she really liked this. And so, anyway, you think it's a terrible present.
So is it like an objet d'art?
Yeah.
So where will it take pride of place in your living room? Okay.
It'll sort of have form a friendship with the dog.
Well, it's one of these things without seeing it.
I made it sound terrible. I've not opened the box.
If I said to you, guess what I got Sarah for Christmas? A flamingo made out of flip-flops. I don't know that your reaction
terrible.
Would have been different. Yes, it does. It does.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
No! Now you've spooked me out here.
Did you keep a receipt?
Yes, I've got. I mean, you know, yes, I've got a sort of skyscraper made out of cabbages. I mean, it's. Oh, good. Yeah.
I will
report back, not
yes,
on,
do, yeah.
not on New Year's Day, but I'll report back on the next one about what the reaction was to the.
Yeah, I feel like you've left us with a real cliffhanger there.
I mean, I've not sold it well, have I?
Not particularly. Do you want to quickly say what our New Year's episode is going to be?
We're bringing
someone else into the chatteroo.
We are. It's our first chatteroo guest, and it is Ben Ansell, who was Reef lecturer. And he was my teaching assistant 20 years ago. I mean, it's yet another advert for the "you stop working for Ed and your career takes off" sort of, you know, thing.
You're a one-man incubator.
And you tried to sort of shake me loose from the podcast, but I've sort of hung on. I've hung on to you, thereby blighting your career.
Yeah, clipping my wings.
Clipping your wings. Geronimo, here you go.
Here I go. Well, we hope you've had a good Christmas.
Yeah, I hope you've had a good Christmas too. Oh, you talk about our listeners as well.
I was addressing them. But,
can
I just ask
you for an early New Year's resolution? Can we get an email address that has chatteroo in it? I feel
I'll figure out how to do it. I could figure it out too.
But there might be an issue about how people spell chatteroo, but I sort of feel like chatteroo. I feel like we just sort of need to kind of
bite the bullet.
Well, it's a sort of branding issue. Do you know what I mean?
I know. I think I've got a login for the website somewhere. I just have to try and remember how to set up an email address. It's been 7 years.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I mean, having said all this, don't sort of cause a kind of permanent lockdown of our email. That would also be unfortunate. So, I mean, I'm perfectly happy with the old. So, people can email in, can't they? readers@cheerfulpodcast.com.
I'll get us Chatteroo at...
What should it be called?
What about chatteroo@cheerfulpodcast.com? That feels like the most simple solution.
Two T's, two O's, one R.
Yeah. And it won't be at all annoying when we have to say that every time we give out the email address.
It is one R, isn't it? Yes.
You invented the word.
I suppose I did. Maybe I should be like...
We should get Susie Dent back on and say, can this be word of the year 2024?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, like, Riz. Riz was the word of the year 2023, yeah?
Riz was it?
Yeah, Riz was. Not Tiz was, but Riz was. Riz meaning charisma.
Oh.
Way of talking about charisma. Did you not know that?
The thing is,
Swifty was going to be they had some competition, I think, where you got to vote. Anyway,
I don't like that. I like it going on behind closed doors at the Oxford University Press
with sort of blue smoke or white smoke.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, they've chosen a word.
Okay, well, so anyway, we're trying to get. I was responsible for squeezed middle becoming the word of the year or the phrase of the year or something in 2000 and something.
That was a great phrase because it did a good job of conveying an idea and for political messaging, but also there was like a bit of saucy postcard double entendre to it as well, wasn't there?
Is that true? That wasn't my intention. Anyway, Chatteroo. Our aims are for Chatteroo, yeah?
Yes, that's going to happen. Early 24. You just wait. I'll update you on it on the episode after the Ben Ansell episode.
Then we'll get it in the Oxford English Dictionary Word of the Year for next year.
Yeah.
How are we going to make it go sort of viral?
We've got to enlist Susie Dent somehow. She seemed to like us when she was on the podcast, didn't she?
I mean, I'm not the first person...
She just has so much riz, that's just how she leaves her feeling.
I'm not the first person to use the word chatteroo to you, am I?
Yes, Ed.
Am I?
Yeah. You're the only person that I'm willing to mention who suffixes words with aroo. It's one of your delightful quirks.
Oh. See you in 2024.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.